And now what teams out there, you know, are a little bit different that could potentially be a contrasting style that you could match up with? And Purdue was the first one that came to mind for me. So I've watched them throughout the year. Certainly have not studying them, but watched them but seeing what they did to Iowa State, even though Iowa State, I believe, came back and took like a 2-point lead, Purdue controlled that game. But Iowa State got on one of their great runs that they can obviously get on because they can score so well from the perimeter. It was very impressive what they did, and also how they closed the game out after they got behind. But I didn't need that game to impress me, though. I was there beforehand.
KU head basketball coach Bill Self talking about the Purdue Boilermakers, the Big Ten champions, the opponent tonight in the Sweet 16, and they're the call, the action, the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Haney. He joins us every Thursday morning to talk Jayhawk athletics, and his appearance is brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by, see Matt, Michelle, and the whole gang, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 785-738-5701. Brian, how stoked are you? I mean, I'm guessing you can't wait for the tip-off tonight.
Man, I'm fired up. I feel like this is, even though it's a Sweet 16, when you've got two first-team All-Americans, you've got two teams that won their respective leagues. I mean, this feels like Elite Eight Final Four territory. And obviously, the Michigan State game didn't feel like your typical round of 32 game. That had kind of an Elite Eight feel to it. And so I'm fired up. I hope the Hawks can do as they did in Tulsa and play off what was a pretty significant home court advantage there and continue to play great defense and capitalize on turning defense into offense, because I think we saw a dialed-in effort about as good as we've seen over a back-to-back stretch. And that's something they obviously need to do four more times.
Well, when you and I talked last week, you were pointing to this game. You were concerned about Purdue, and rightfully so, with the bigs that they have. We've heard so much about the problems that Purdue could pose to Kansas. I want to start on the other side and the problems that Kansas can cause Purdue. If Purdue's playing man-to-man, and if they just have the one big, then that, I think, that works. You got a four-guard lineup against the four-guard lineup for the most part. If they try to play two bigs, I think they have major matchup issues. I mean, who the heck is going to guard Josh Jackson? And would Purdue go some zone, perhaps, with two bigs?
They could. And if they end up playing more than 6 or 8 minutes with Haas and Swanigan side-by-side, you may see that. They've been playing more with Vincent Edwards at the four and Swanigan the five. And Edwards would draw the Jackson matchup the bulk of the time, and he's been really good. He's the only junior in America in major conferences with 1,000 career points, 500 rebounds, and 300 assists. He's a talented guy. But Josh is one of the six best players in the tournament, and of those still playing, you know, one of the top five best players in the tournament. And so clearly, you know, that's a matchup that I'm not sure they have a perfect answer for. And I don't think they have a perfect answer for any of the guard or wings in this lineup. Now, that's not to sell short Purdue's wing talent. They've got five guys that shoot 40% or better from downtown. But if we're going to talk about advantages versus advantages, you know, Kansas has a speed and athleticism advantage at almost every guard position. And they really want to get running downhill. They want to get out in transition and push the ball. And I think transition defense becomes a paramount concern for Purdue in this one. But obviously, in a second, we'll talk about Purdue's bigs and what that means for Kansas on the defensive glass. But I really feel like, in terms of personnel and mixing and matching, it's Vincent Edwards on Josh Jackson that'll be that potential solution for Purdue more times than not.
And you mentioned the bigs that they have. Swanigan, as we heard Coach Self talk about and talk about Purdue in general, they're a really good basketball team, the Big Ten champions. You know, foul trouble certainly is big. Kansas doesn't have as much depth. And the last game, watching this one, and I'm sitting here, and Bragg, every time Bragg came in, it just bad things happened to Kansas. He didn't play very well at all. And I was saying out loud, bring Colby in. Let's see what Colby can do. And that's exactly what Coach Self did. Colby came in and gave him 9 great minutes, had an offensive rebound put back, I believe. He had an offensive rebound kick out, made a free throw. He was aggressive, very physical on defense down low, and had some fouls to give, of course. How important is it for Kansas to, one, stay out of foul trouble in the post, but then, two, who does Bill Self go to first off the bench in replacing Landon Lucas? Does he go Colby? Does he go Bragg?
You know what? He's not officially said anything, but I would be surprised if it wasn't Dwight. And I feel like there's still hope and hopefully still time that Carlton makes a spark, like we talked about on one of the last couple of reports, where you know, that Sasha Khan game in 08, where one of the guys just comes out of the woodwork and gives you more than you've seen on a regular basis. Sasha versus Davidson was 6-for-6 with 13 points. I still think Carlton could have one of those games in the right matchup. But this team is not only tall and long, but they're thick. And I feel like you need that more imposing physical brick wall presence, not that Dwight's fully a brick wall. He's kind of like, a shed or something. I mean, he's got more bulk to him than Carlton does, but he's still not Haas. I mean, nobody's Haas. Bill Self called Isaac Haas Ivan Drago from Rocky IV.
Yes.
So, you get more of that with Dwight, and I think lately you get more consistency with Dwight in terms of being in the right place and not getting baited into leaving your feet and then having the guy go right around you. So I feel like the odds are he's going to turn to Dwight first, but don't write off Carlton completely just yet, because if they are to play four more games, and boy, wouldn't we be lucky if they did, they're going to need him at some point. But I definitely feel like Sunday marked a changing of the guard in the pecking order there. But you're only as good as your next day, next game, right? So he's going to have to go out there and back that up. But when he's coming off the floor and Landon Lucas is saying to Dwight, thanks for saving my career, I mean, if that doesn't earn you another day as a first big off the bench, I don't know what does.
Well, and then you think about it too, and Coach Self, of course, is a brilliant coach. You think about the other players on the floor, and they said nothing but great things about Dwight Colby after that game. As you mentioned, Landon Lucas, I think Devontae Graham said he's the MVP of the game, even though he only played 9 minutes. And I do wonder about that, because thinking that Coach Self maybe factors that in is, you know, if I bring in Carlton to start off tonight to replace Landon Lucas, does the team around Carlton Bragg on the floor, Frank Mason, Josh Jackson, Devontae Graham, and others, are they confident Carlton's going to do his job? Because he seemed lost in some pick-and-roll action, and Dwight was much better with the pick-and-roll defense and hedging and on the screens. Or they get a boost then when Colby is the first choice instead of Bragg going into the game tonight? Because to me, I look at it as this is not a good matchup for Carlton Bragg to really play a lot.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to what you said there. And the honest answer is that, yeah, I think his teammates trust Dwight Colby more right now. And, you never want to say enough doubt and disparaging remarks to bury a kid in the eyes of the fan base, because that's not the case with Carlton at all. And Carlton, if you looked at the video in the locker room when Dwight came in and everybody mobbed Dwight, Carlton was the second or third guy there to hoist him up and jump on top of him. And, you know, he's still a guy that is liked within that locker room and all that. But I do think that it's been a season where he's not lived up to expectations, and at times hasn't come through when they've needed him to where the trust is a little bit lower than what it could have been or should have been at this juncture in his second full season at Kansas. And obviously there have been some distractions that have contributed to that as well. I think when you're playing in a one-and-done scenario every game going forward, and for guys like Frank and Landon and Josh, every time they put on that Kansas uniform might be the last time, the margin for error in extending your career is so small at this point. The stakes are so high that there is some disappointment when you don't come through as a teammate. And you do lose a little bit of trust, I suppose. But let's make this more about them gaining trust in Dwight than being let down by Carlton. Because, like I said, there's still maybe a moment where he sparks him. But I think you're very astute in everything you pointed out there. And I think that's a big reason why Dwight should be the second big that gets the bulk of the minutes behind Landon.
How does Kansas approach defending Swanigan in the post? Do you think they're going to start out trying to let Landon handle him man-to-man? Do you think they're going to trap or double-team, get the ball out of Swanigan's hands? I mean, Swanigan's a really good passer. He was double-teamed at times against Iowa State. He has over 100 assists. He's also a guy that you can't lay off of. He shoots over 40% from three-point land. How does Kansas approach defending Swanigan? And is there a chance, maybe, I guess anything, there's always a chance of anything, but in 2012, KU played a little triangle in two against Purdue. Could you possibly envision them playing a junk defense, as some people call that?
Maybe. I wouldn't put anything past Coach Self. And all of your breakdowns there are on point. He's a really good passer. Nearly had a triple-double in the Iowa State game. Just lacked three assists from doing that. which, think about that. To do that in any game is great, but to do it in a 5-versus-4 NCAA tournament game, that's big-time stuff. And they've got all those capable shooters that I mentioned, 5 of them that shoot 40% or better from downtown. So if you fully commit to a double team, he's going to find the open guy, and you better hope the open guy doesn't beat you. So I think it's a situation where Kansas has been effective enough in the traps that they'll continue to do that some. But they truly have to pick their spots on when they feel they can trap him and turn him over, which they are susceptible to doing. That's really probably the biggest Achilles heel of this Purdue team is turnovers. But you got to pick your spots. You can't just commit to it every time he touches the ball, because you know, sometimes it's a deep enough catch to where you're either going to wind up fouling, or you know he's going to have a quick touch pass kick out and you got a wide open three. So I think that, not to be a cop-out answer, I think the answer is somewhere in the middle. It's a happy medium of still committing to trapping some, but knowing when to go for it and when to hope that Landon can hold his own. And a lot of this is predicated, Wade, on can Landon stay out of foul trouble?
Yes.
Can Landon be his full defensive self without getting two quick ones? And he's very mindful of that. And the thing that you like as a Kansas fan is, you know, he's one of the smartest players Bill Self's ever coached. And he knows where to pick his spots on beefing up the defense and when to kind of back off a bit. But that's going to be as interesting a chess match as any, starting with how effective can Landon be in a one-on-one setting, how effective can he be in staying out of foul trouble, but then can you bring the traps in a man-to-man? Do you have to junk it up? And does foul trouble dictate what you do defensively in terms of a zone or something like that because of, you know, an early whistle that goes against you? All of these things will be very fascinating to see play out in the first, I would say by the under 12-minute media timeout in the first half, we'll have a pretty good feel for how this is going to go.
I agree with you on that. Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, is with us, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. To your farm, home, auto, and life and crop insurance, stop by, see Matt and Michelle, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 785-738-5701. We had Dave Armstrong on earlier this week on the show, and he said to him, the key for Kansas is Josh Jackson. For me, I think the X factor, and we take Frank Mason for granted, of course, and now Landon Lucas to an extent, but to me, the X factor is Devontae Graham. The bounce in his step and the way he's shooting the ball right now, if he's on, and Mason, even if he's not on from the outside, which he wasn't the other day, he can still put it on the floor, drive, and create things. And we know Lucas has been consistent, and Jackson was just fantastic once he settled down against the Spartans. But is that X factor, at least offensively, Devontae Graham? I mean, when he's playing like that, how special is this team?
Yeah, I think not just offensively, but all over the floor. Mm-hmm. He had 7 steals in Tulsa. Just looked quicker, mm-hmm. as you said, bouncier. Nobody benefited more from the extra couple of days off, and they weren't 2 true full days off. I should be careful in saying that. Everybody assumes you lose to TCU on Thursday, and they're just like, you know, in their beds watching Netflix for 72 hours. They don't handle off days like you and I do in our mid-30s.
Yeah.
But they had one off day where they truly didn't do anything. They had a really hard practice, and they had a couple of lighter ones. But as a guy who had a bad ankle versus TCU and needed some time, it was Devontae that benefited the most. And I felt like he was, as you said, extra skip in the step, anticipating and passing lanes, getting runouts because of it. He was hitting the threes to bury teams like Devontae can, perhaps better than anybody. You look at hot shooting in stretches where there's like a flurry of threes to just bury somebody or to come all the way back against somebody like West Virginia at home, for example. It's usually Devontae that gets in that ridiculous groove and you just get the ball to number 4 and get out of the way. We saw that in Tulsa. And if that continues, a couple of things could happen, one of which Kansas fans are going to like, one of which Kansas fans are not. If he keeps playing like that, they could hang a 6th banner in the field house and a 15th Final Four. If he keeps playing like that, he might not come back for that senior day that Bill Self was baiting him into. And you know what? I think most rational-thinking Kansas fans, if you told them right now, you can trade a 4th season with Devontae for a 6th national championship, they'd take it.
Yes.
But at what point would you not make the trade? Right. Would you forego a final season with Devontae for a 15th Final Four, but nothing beyond that?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if folks would. So it's one of those things where definitely cheer for him to do well, because if he does well, they've got a great chance to win it all. But man, he has a chance here to really elevate his stock as well. And I think he's a kid that is loving his time at Kansas. And I think, you know, prior to the tournament, while he's definitely going to test the waters, a lot of folks will tell you there's a good chance he comes back. But he is putting on a show right now, two games in, that if it continues, could take him to different places. So that's something that's certainly in the back of my mind, and I'm guessing a lot of your listeners have thought about that too.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, assuming KU beats Purdue tonight, who do you think is a better matchup in the Elite Eight, Oregon or Michigan?
I'm
more worried about Michigan. I think they're just so hot. It reminds me of VCU back in, what year was it, 2009, when the KU played in the Elite Eight. They were so hot. I think Michigan's a better team than that VCU team. Oregon's so athletic. But at the same time, Michigan, this team worries me a little bit.
the personnel scares me more from Oregon, even without Boucher.
Yep.
I mean, you've got the Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year, the Pac-12 Player of the Year. I mean, you've got one of the most clutch players in the nation this year in Dylan Brooks. And I haven't even alluded to, Tyler Dorsey, who they call Mr. March, and has had five straight 20-point games. It's really a tough scenario to choose either or because of the fact that you mentioned with Michigan, there really does seem to be a team of destiny type feel with them after the story that we're all familiar with by now of the plane heading down the runway to take off toward the Big Ten tournament and having to abort to take off and thankfully, nobody was killed or hurt or anything. But they go on this amazing run at the Big Ten tourney, win that, then really get outplayed by Oklahoma State for the bulk of that game. But they hit 11 of 15 threes in one half. It's crazy. 16 in the game. That's nuts. And obviously, we've seen that before with Iowa State this year. That's how they came back to beat Kansas and Allen Fieldhouse, an 18 three-pointer game. But they had 11 in one half and win that game by one over Oklahoma State. And Bill Self was the guy who told me first before anybody else, Cowboys played well enough to win that game and should have won that game. Mm-hmm. And yet, when you find a way to grind them out like that, when shots are falling, and you look at some of the difficult shots they've hit in their first two games, they really do just seem like an on-fire club right now. And you don't want to run into that. And that's why, to be honest, as much as I'm scared of Purdue, I didn't want to run into Iowa State right now because of how hot they were in February and how comfortable they are in the Sprint Center for seniors. Deontay Burton's hot. Monte Morris is playing for the last chapter in his legacy. I didn't want anything to do with that either. And I think those are the teams that scare you this time of year, especially in this format. And you referenced VCU in 2011. Some would think to Arizona back in 95-96. And hopefully this is or 97, I guess it was. Hopefully this is a team in Michigan that if Kansas does face them, the personnel advantages that exist on paper will come to fruition on the floor. Because I do think at several spots, Kansas has a decided advantage. But, man, there's something to be said for momentum, especially in March. And clearly they've got about as much of that as anybody.
No question. All right, time for off-the-wall question before we let you go. Chuck Barris passed away here the last couple of days. He was American game show creator, producer, and host, best known for hosting The Gong Show. He created the dating game and the newlywed game. Your off-the-wall question, Brian Haney, is what is your favorite game show of all time that you love or like to watch?
Well, I've got a couple answers, and that's one of my favorite questions you've asked. I grew up watching Press Your Luck and Avoiding the Whammy.
Oh, yes.
And love that one. Whenever you stay home from school sick, you start your day with Price is Right with Bob Barker around 10 a.m., and then you flip it over to, like, USA Network and watch game shows all afternoon if you were me. and I love Press Your Luck with Peter Tamarkin, I think it was.
Uh-huh.
Who tragically died. He was a missionary that was flying an airplane to take folks from one city to the next for medical treatment and all that. And tragically died. But anyways, that's kind of a downer for your game show question.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot. Yeah.
Point is, I love both of those. I love their hosts, and absolutely would pick Plinko if I was ever.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, Price is Right. Yeah.
It's like you and I are the same person because the first answer I have is Plinko within The Price is Right because that's a show I grew up with if I was playing hooky at home. And honestly, the other one I really liked was Press Your Luck because of the whammies and what they did, those weird monsters or creatures and how they danced and took people's money. Those are my favorite ones as well. But the fact you brought up Plinko, oh my goodness gracious, that just floors me.
How about that? Cut from the same cloth.
I guess so. Well, hey, man, we appreciate time as always. Have a great call tonight, and hopefully next week we're talking to you as you get ready to go to Phoenix.
Sounds good, man. I look forward to it.
Take care,
thanks
man.
A lot, Wade.
See ya.
Yeah.
That's Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks here, brought to you every single Thursday by Anderson Insurance Agency. To do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance, stop by and see Matt and Michelle, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 785-738-5701.